This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Settled understanding, which becomes a protector for him, a shield for him, and a place of refuge from the tragedies and difficulties of life. When he settles in his mind the righteousness of the Creator of life, and that he provides for them and leads them in his wisdom. Even though the human intellect is not able to understand the details of the Ribbono Shel Olam's leadership, but the human mind can understand it in principle. As one sees in general the way the creation is structured. In that he sees in the creation wonders and miracles which indicate a wise intent and the conscious desire of he who knows everything. In other words, there's a system. The moment you identify that there's a system in the Bria, that enables one to relax a little bit, that there's nothing which is coincidental, there's nothing which is chaotic, that it all operates with a system designed by the Yodea V'Yochel, he who knows and is able to do. Then although you don't always understand exactly what's happening and where it's fitting in, as we discussed in the Matzah Shabbos Shir on the Afikomen, sometimes you have to wait until the Afikomen before you understand what happened in the past. But at least the in general one understands that everything has a purpose and that there is a system governing the world. In that he provides for the smallest creature and the greatest of them everything they need. Mechushim nistorim, venirim. Senses which are hidden senses and senses which are visible senses. The ruchos, the evorim, and different life forces, spirits, and limbs. The som hakelim mefikim ruuyim leruchos. And he provides each creature with the equipment needed for its spirit to achieve its purpose. The shom latzuvuim midas hagvuro, chle hadriso v'aterif. And that he gives the carnivorous animals the middle of gevura, of strength, and the equipment to kill with their hands, with their paws, and to eat that way. V'som la'aneves v'la'ayil klei habricho umidas hamirach. And he gives the rabbit and the ram. This piece of kuzari is designed for people who are going to the game reserve today. And he gives the rabbit and the lamb the middle of being able to flee. So you see a system there. He gives the lion what he needs to catch the lamb, and he gives the deer, and he gives the deer what he needs to preserve his life. And then he puts them together. Umidas hamoirich, and fear. Because if the deer didn't have that fear, he wouldn't be so alert. You see, the deer is always listening, and his ears always flicking, and he's always alert. That's what causes him to be able to survive the predators. And anybody who analyzes the purpose of the different limbs of the body and their value in terms of the spirit of the creature, he will see in that incredible righteousness and order, which will not leave in his mind any doubt about the righteousness of Hashem. You might ask, but how do you explain the fact that the poor rabbit is the food for the predators? And the fly is the food for the spider? Where do we see the righteousness of Hashem in that? And the seichel must answer. That's an emotional reaction, and the intellect needs to come into play. And it must scold the emotion. How can I attribute crookedness to a chochum whose righteousness is clear to me and who has no benefit in the crookedness? Why should the Ribbono Shel Olam take pleasure in making the fly the food for the spider, or the hare the food for the fox? What should the Ribbono Shel Olam do such a thing for? Crookedness, there has to be some kind, either he has to be a crooked in essence, or there's got to be benefit, there's got to be some kind of expedience. You won't find a tzaddik being crooked just for the sake of being crooked. That's a tzaddik asasri, that can't be. So if we've established that Ribbono Shel Olam is a tzaddik, and we've established that he has no benefit in spiders eating flies and in foxes eating hares, then we've got to understand that it isn't possible that it's unrighteous. It must be righteous. We don't understand it, good. But we understand the axioms, and the axioms are that the Ribbono Shel Olam is a tzaddik, and that he has no benefit in these things, and therefore there must be righteousness to it. And if the hunting of the predators of the rabbit and the hunting of the fly by the spider would be coincidental, then I can say, how can the Ribbono Shel Olam allow such things to happen? As if they just happened and the Ribbono Shel Olam allowed it. But I see this isn't just something which just happened. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. If you look at the structure of the lion, at his teeth, at his paws, look at the claws on his feet, you realize that Ribbono Shel Olam created him to kill the deer. That is his function. That's how he eats. And the essence of the spider is designed for tachbulo. What's a nice translation for that? Not for catching ensnaring. The son lo arigo levush mibli lemido, and he gave him the ability to create the art of weaving without ever learning it. Yarui chashevochim lazvuv, it weaves its web for the fly. The somloi kelim ruuyim limlo chazos, and the Ribbono Shel Olam created in the fly the necessary kelim for that skill in the spider. Uz vizimen lo azvuv lemichyo lemozon, and he created the fly. He couldn't have created a more suitable candidate for the web than the fly. Just as he's created all sorts of fish for the bigger fish. Can one say anything but that this is a chokhmah which I don't understand? And I've got to assume that there's tzidkus in it. If it all happened by mistake, I could say, how did the Ribbono Shel Olam allow it? But if the Ribbono Shel Olam did it, then I can't say, how could the Ribbono Shel Olam have done it? One thing I know for sure is that is a perfect balance. That there is a tzedek in it, there is a righteousness in it. And if I don't yet understand that, good. So I don't understand that. When we used to go to the game reserve as children, I remember this used to trouble my father very much. And I don't think he was aware of this kuzari at the time. How can we say, v'racham v'akul ma'asov? I remember when we were watching a kill, very disturbed about that. How can we say, v'racham v'akul ma'asov, and Hashem's mercy is on all His creations? What about the poor buck? All these creations, okay, nearly all of them, but what about the poor buck? What about the fly and the spider web, the kuzari? This is the kuzari and achinami. We don't understand the specific of that. But what we do understand is that it's deliberate. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam's action, it's not mikre. And the fact that it's a deliberate act by a chochom who is a tzaddik. If it's a tzaddik who's not a chochom, so you could say, so he made a mistake. Didn't design the place well. He doesn't like it, but he made a mistake in his design. If he's a chochom and not a tzaddik, you can say he's a sadist. He enjoys watching flies getting caught in webs. But if he's a tzaddik and a chochom and he's doing it deliberately, what can you say? It must be tzidkus. I don't understand it. But that's what we mean when we say hatsu tomim poli. When one stands at a graveside, who understands why? A family stands at a graveside and the coffin's being loaded into the grave. And what do they say at that moment of absurdity in their minds? Of what is the purpose of life and what's it all about and where's it all going? What do they say? Hatsu tomim poli. That's what has to be said at that time. One thing I know is it wasn't a coincidence. This was an act of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who is the Ribbono Shel Olam? Tzaddik and the Chacham. He's wiser than any wisdom can contemplate, and he's more righteous than any righteousness can contemplate. And he did it, therefore it must be the wisest and most righteous thing that can possibly be done. That's what I know. That's what I know. That's what I understand. More than that, I can't understand. And that's what one has to... Which one is easy to understand? Yeah, but why in such a cruel, an apparently cruel way? No, they could be herbivorous. They could be herbivorous, like before the flood. Yeah. Why did they have to eat each other? What's the purpose? Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam create a bria where the whole bria survives on other parts of that bria, particular life parts? It's difficult to appreciate, but one has to try and understand. One has to study it. That's what one has to do in the game reserve. This is what one has to do, to study the kalim of every creature. One sees it with birds more than anything else. People go to the game reserve and they sometimes don't understand how you can stay there for 10 days, for 2 weeks. And I tell you, you can't begin for less than 10 days. And now we're only going for a few days. That's all we could get. But it's really just to take the children away. If one really wants to go to the game, it's got to be 10 days, 2 weeks minimum. You can't go for it. You don't start noticing things until you've been there for 4 or 5 days. Then you begin to notice things. And then you've got to start studying them. You look at the birds. And you watch how each bird is given the kalim that it needs for the melocha that it does, the water birds and the different things that they eat. You look at a bird and you watch it and you study it, you see how it operates, and then you watch its body, and you look at the kalim, the things that are different about that bird to any other bird, and you realize that this bird has been created by the Ribbono Shel Olam with every little detail, specifically for that function that it performs. And you can sit there and you can watch, and what happens to us very often, we're sitting and we're watching and watching. And a whole lot of cars start gathering around us, and they don't want to disturb us because they see us watching and watching with binoculars. And eventually somebody says, where is it? So it's in a tree. And they say, a leopard! No, a bird! And then quickly it goes around everybody that we're only looking at a bird, and they all go. They don't understand that you see the wonders of the bria no more in a lion than in a bird. A lion's dramatic, and people like dramatic things. But the Chochmas HaBriya you see in a bird, just the same as a lion. The thrill is just the same. It makes no difference if you're watching a bird or you're watching a lion. Or we've watched spider webs as well. They're the most unbelievable spider webs. They are webs that are as big as the height of this room. They're unbelievable, with the most intricate and sophisticated geometrical weaving. You sit and you look and you watch a spider weaving that. Is there anything more? Do you see more Chochmas HaBriya when you look at a lion? It doesn't matter what you're looking at. That's what one studies, and that's what one notices. The Chochmas HaBriya, that somehow each thing has its place in the Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam made it, designed it, and put it there for that purpose. And of course, with human beings. Every human being has his talents, has his Chochmah, has his wisdom, his abilities, his circumstance, designed just like each bird for a specific job of work which the Ribbono Shel Olam has designed for that human being. The only difference is, when you come out of the game reserve, you understand a lot of things. One of the things you understand is you come out and you notice the big nafkimina. In the game reserve, every little bird has got its kalim and it does exactly what it was designed to do. You come out into the big wide world and you see everybody has their kalim, and all they're busy looking at is everybody else's kalim and trying to do what everybody else's do. You know, imagine a leopard trying to be a lion, and a lion trying to be a hyena, and a hyena trying to be a buck, and a buck trying to be a bird. Would be mishugoylam. Imagine you go to the game reserve and you see a lion trying to climb up the tree. You go a little bit further and you see an elephant trying to laugh like a hyena. Trying to laugh. He can't get the laugh out. Getting frustrated, trying to laugh. And then you go a little bit further and you see the hyena trying to fly. Well, what would you think? You would think you're in Disneyland. It would be absurd. But when you come out of the game reserve, that's exactly what you see. Wherever you look, that's exactly what you see. People doing things, trying so desperately to do that for which they're not designed, while totally ignoring all their strengths, all their koches, all their talents, totally ignoring that and trying to be somebody else and trying to be something else. It's pathetic. Ach, the animals must have a good time when people come to the game reserve.
When you compare a kilo of a leopard to a hyena dog, much more
Each one is different. Each one has its own koichos. Each one's a completely different thing.
Are you then saying people who visit the game reserve
actors. Sure, they're on stage when they're out of the game. He's a fool. And somebody who appreciates that, who understands that. So he goes to the game reserve and he sees that's the way life is. When he comes out, he realizes that it's the same with human beings. Things happen, tragedies occur, we don't always understand them, but then he becomes like Nochum Ish Gamzu. Whenever he encounters a tragedy, he says, this is also for goodness. I don't always know why, but whatever the Ribbono Shel'Olam does must be good. And he lands up living a continuously pleasant life. Nothing can disturb his sense of pleasure. The Tekal Olov Hatzoris. And tragedy becomes easier to bear. And furthermore, he can even take pleasure in tragedy if he realizes that this comes for sin which he's committed. This is a person who's paying off a debt. It's hard, you're paying money out. But at least you understand you're paying money out and the debt's becoming less, the burden is becoming less. So it depends how you look at the debt. If you look at the debt as this is my money which I'm giving away, then it hurts a little bit. But if you look at this is their money and I now owe them less, that the debit in my book, the debt which I owe them is now a lower figure than it was before. So I've achieved something. That's something that's worthwhile. One takes a certain pleasure in it. Yeah, sure. Actions. No, it's something you've done yourself. So you've got to learn from that. Something that you cause yourself through carelessness or through doing something that you shouldn't be doing. That's not a punishment. And stick your hand in the fire, then getting burnt is not a punishment for talking Lashon Hara. It's punishment for sticking your hand in the fire. If he should have done better, if he had all at his disposal everything he could have done and it was simple carelessness, then that's not punishment, that's the consequences of bad judgment. But if he couldn't have known better, he made a decision in the best of his knowledge at that time, and things went against him. That's from the Ribbono Shel Olam, comes with the Tevil. V'yismach l'schar v'ligmul atzofim loy, and he takes pleasure in the ultimate reward which is awaiting him. V'yismach v'moshu melamid livnei odom me'asevu v'atzdokas din abirei, and he takes pleasure in the teaching of humanity, that he shows them how to tolerate suffering. That's also a wonderful thing. That means the Ribbono Shel Olam has appointed him as a teacher to humanity to guide them in how to handle difficult situations, and he takes a certain pleasure in that privilege. And he takes pleasure in the refinement of his good name which results from this, both among people and among the Ribbono Shel Olam, in how he handles suffering. That's an important achievement. And just as we take pleasure in any achievement, you find a person who's built an empire or passed an exam, he takes pleasure. People say, ah, isn't he clever, isn't he wonderful? He takes pleasure and he's fully entitled to take pleasure. There's a sense of pride in that. So there is an equal sense of pride in handling Yisurin with pleasantness and with acceptance and with understanding. That's an enormous achievement and one has to take pleasure in that. That's as far as tragedies directed at him individually are concerned. Likewise in general tzoros. When one starts thinking of the tragedy of the Jewish situation, the Golus and where we are, and the nation scattered all over the place, the first step is, Hatzur Tomin Polo, Hashem is perfect and he knows what he's doing. And then one has to think of Am Yisrael paying off its indebtedness. That there will be reward in the world to come. And that one has to cleave to Hashem in this world. And if the Satan makes him despair, and he starts wondering whether the Jewish people can ever pull themselves together again, our generation doesn't know what that despair is. But imagine what people felt in 1945 and in 1946. Can the Jewish people ever pull themselves together again? Is it possible to re-establish those yeshivas, to re-establish those schools, to re-establish those organizations, to re-establish the printing presses, to get going, to start the whole thing again? Is it possible? Lagoidan, there have been times that have been worse than that. In the end of the 19th century, do you know how many Jews there were in the world? End of the 19th century. It's only, say, 50 years before the Second World War. End of the 19th century, yeah. There were 2 million Jews in the entire world. So it's unbelievable at what rate there was an increase in population. And people were very despairing at that time. What's going to happen to the Jewish people? The numbers have just gone down and down and down due to plague and pogroms and all sorts of things. We go up and we go down, and in the downs we feel very negative. So one has to know, the way that we've just disappeared as a nation, as the Novi says, our bones have dried up, our hope has been lost, the destruction has been decreed for us. Think of the bad times that Israel have had. Yitzias Mitzrayim, look what happened to us. Think of the Dayenu, how each step the Ribbono Shel Olam took us out of trouble and redeemed us. And the Jewish person has to feel confident for the future of the Jewish nation, even if there is only one Jew left. Because that's a haftocha from the Ribbono Shel Olam, that there will always be a Sheiris HaPleito, and even if there's only one Jew left, he should feel absolutely confident in the Ribbono Shel Olam's ability and intention to revitalize the Jewish nation. As with Avraham Avinu, there was one Jew, and he had to believe in absolute faith that everything was going to be okay. And as the Novi says, don't worry, you worm of Yaakov. What does it mean, you worm of Yaakov? What is a human being when before Tchias HaMesim? What is he? Worms in the grave, that's all there is. And out of that comes a new human being. And we have to realize from that part of the belief in Tchias HaMesim is not just belief in an event which is going to happen one day. But we have to believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam's constant powers of Tchias HaMesim, that no matter how far there has been decomposition, as long as there's something there, even if it's one Jew, the whole structure can be revived in a very short time. That's the nature of the Jewish people, and that's the nature of the Ribbono Shel Olam's promise to them. Omar HaKuzri, the Kuzri says, "Kamezeh yichya begolus chayim arevim." With such an attitude, you can live even in Golus quite pleasantly. V'yifre pri teiroso be'ilum hazeh ve'ilum habo. And he can multiply the fruits of his Torah both in this world and the world to come. Umishu soivel hagolus miskatzif. And one who through the suffering of the Golus gets angry and bitter. Kimachu mafsid oilomoi v'acharisei. He loses out this world and the world to come. Says the Kuzri, I understand that there's an art to living in the Golus. And that it is possible to live in the Golus. You've been given a structure which enables you to endure suffering with pleasure. And one who doesn't know these skills not only loses his Olam Hazeh, but he loses Olam Habo as well. Everything will go. Very interesting theory that the Kuzri is presenting here. That pleasure in Olam Hazeh and in Olam Habo are attached. It's not the feeling that, you suffer in Olam Hazeh, but it's okay in Olam Habo. Pleasure, says the Kuzri here, if you don't have pleasure in Olam Hazeh, you won't make it to Olam Habo. But how you have pleasure does not depend on your circumstances. That's the important thing of the Kuzri. Whether or not you have pleasure depends on your capacity for pleasure, on your understanding, on your emunah, on your bitochin, on your understanding of Tchias HaMesim. All these things determine the extent of your ability to enjoy a circumstance. But if you don't enjoy your circumstance, you're not going to be able to get to Olam Habo. And that's the essence of the whole thing, that pleasure does not come from our environment. Pleasure comes from within us. We have to generate the pleasure. We have to generate the happiness from within us. And if we're able to do that, we've been given all the structures and all the kalim. The Torah provides us with everything we need to generate happiness even in the most difficult of circumstances. And if we can't do that, then even in pleasant circumstances, there is no happiness. You see, I think it was in Time magazine, they had a cartoon of a fellow on the beach with his laptop computer and his fax machine and his portable telephone. And did you see that all stacked up there with papers printing out all over the place? Is he enjoying himself on the beach? Is he having a good time? So you say to him, what's wrong with you? You've got to relax a little bit. You're on the beach. Just forget about it. Is he short of money? No, he's not short of money. But he's in a constant fear of losing touch, constant fear of what might be happening, constant fear of losing his money. Is there a possibility for happiness under such circumstances? It's absolutely impossible for such a person to be happy no matter what he gets. No matter what you give him, there's nothing that you can give him that can make him happy. He doesn't have the capacity for happiness. You have a beach bum down the way there, he's got nothing, and he is happy, he's got nothing to worry about, no fax machine, no portable telephone, nothing. He's enjoying himself. The capacity for happiness has nothing to do with the circumstances of the individual. And that's part of the tragedy of the human situation. It's his pursuit of happiness in things. And he's missing the point all the time. The pursuit of happiness is using the mechanisms of the Torah to find meaning and support in whatever one's doing. The amazing thing is with these animals also, even at the very times that it's all going on, they don't need psychiatrists, and they don't need counselors, and they don't need ministers of religion. They get over it very quickly. They're happy, they're fine, they're on with life. Life goes on very quickly. No bet. That's different. But they're not happy. There's a difference between enjoying and happiness. Yeah, there's that's not Meshuggah at all. There's a creative.
I used to go to the beach in the sea. I love my clothing and I'm back in the fish perspective. They're not conformists, I'm a conformist. I find it very difficult from seeing
that's creative fulfillment.
I agree. But what's happening to you might be happiness to me. When you mention Torah, that's it.
The creative fulfillment is different to what we're talking about happiness. Happiness is a certain yishuv hadas, where your mind can totally relax, where there's a total absence of tension, of negative tension. And that situation can't exist without these structures. Where no matter what, business, it's all very fine, but at the end of the day there's a certain tension and that's what keeps you going, that's what you enjoy. That's also fine. But that's not the happiness we're talking here. We're talking about a yishuv. A yishuv hadas, which is a state of being that the human being needs, in fact, for his creativeness. He's got to have an atmosphere of yishuv hadas. That's the happiness we're talking about, which one can't really have in a business climate. They who don't understand the concept of simcha don't allow these things to bother them, that life goes on, there's an acceptance about them. We who understand the concept of simcha, that we should employ our mechanisms of simcha. That's why you'll find that the kal vachomer is that Rashi brings from the animals and from nature, the chazals that Rashi brings on the Chumash several times. The stars that go round and the solar system that operates, even though they have no bechira and even though they have nothing, they perform the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam day and night. Kol Shechein, we have to remember these Rashi's. By the Selah, the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to bring, he speaks to the Selah responds. The fact that nature operates without any rebellion against the Ribbono Shel Olam, all the more so we who have consciousness and can see the purpose of it. That's how one has to operate it. I mean, of course, their capacity for simcha is less, and their capacity for sadness is less. But one sees a balance there and an acceptance there, which we have to be able to learn from them.
Just to realize that our challenge is that we don't live such instinctive lives. For example, when we talk about their talents, so for them it's not an issue how they have to behave because they don't know any other way of behaving. But a human being doesn't see things so borderly. He doesn't act his life by instinct.
I'm not suggesting that animals are more moral than human beings, or they're more righteous than human beings, or they're cleverer than human beings. All I'm suggesting is that Ribbono Shel Olam created them, among other things, to teach us how to live. Because just as for every animal of the millions of different species, every one is created with its kalim and its job, so we must assume that every human being has also been created with its kalim and its job. And we need to learn from the animal. We need to learn that from the animals. That's all. Not that they're greater than us because they've learned it and we haven't. They're not greater than us. But that the Ribbono Shel Olam has put them there to teach us that. Apart from other reasons, Ribbono Shel'Olam has put them there to teach us, and we need to study them. We need to notice that. We need to become aware of that, to realize that that introduces a Yishuv Hadas. When you see the little chocho with its kelim and its function, one makes a kavod chomer to myself. So what am I looking for? All sorts of things. Let me look what kelim I've got. Let me figure out what the Ribbono Shel'Olam wants from me through my kelim. You don't need nevuah for that. Just as the animal doesn't need it. I want to go a little bit further here. Omar Achover Umash Umimash Yosif Loi Arevus Al Arevus. And I'm now going to teach you, says the Kuzari, how a human being can find even more pleasure, in increase his pleasure. And he's talking of physical, hedonistic pleasure. Sheyavorech Tomid Al Kol Mashu Motzi Min Ha'olam Umashu Motzi Mimenu. That he makes a brocha on whatever he finds in the world and whatever the world finds for him. The brocha is a mechanism for increasing the level of pleasure. How does that work? Brochas are going to increase pleasure? That's a chiddush for him. Omar Achover Haloi Ha'odom Hasholim. Yoisei Roi She'esapir Bahargosho Sa'ano B'mashiyoicho V'yishteh. The more perfect a man, the more is his pleasure in eating and drinking. We're talking about physical pleasures. Just as a human being, or an adult human being, finds more pleasure in eating and drinking than a child or an animal. So the higher the form of life, the more pleasure there is in the fulfillment of the needs, as we discussed in last night's year. Just as an animal finds more pleasure in food than a plant, although a plant is being nourished all the time, it finds no pleasure in that nourishment. An animal finds a bit of pleasure in his nourishment, and a human being finds even more pleasure than it, in its nourishment. And an Odom Asholem finds the most pleasure in his nourishment. This is not spiritual. He didn't have that kasha. If it's such an animal, if the satisfaction of a need is such a pleasure, why don't animals also have that pleasure? The answer is that even that pleasure, as basic and as fundamental as it is, becomes greater as the human being becomes greater. The greater the man, the greater is the physical pleasure of the satisfaction of his needs. That's kol agodol mechaveru yitzra godol emunah. Plain yitzra. The enjoyment of olam hazeh is greater the bigger the tzaddik is. And that creates his challenges. Yeah, same, that's the concept, the foolish. Omar HaKuzuri, so the Kuzuri says, Keinu li yisorin achush va'argoshu bahano. So it is when one can feel with all the senses of pleasure. Ki imayu mevin el hashikur kol hashi yisavi. Imagine a drunkard, and one would bring him whatever he wants. V'hu b'inyan shikusu, at a time when he's in the midst of his drunkenness. We'll bring him whatever he wants to eat and whatever he wants to drink, the finest meats and the most perfect champagnes. The yishmo hanigunim, and we'll play him the most beautiful music. The yishaberi mishiyehov, and we'll supply with him the most beloved lady of his dreams. The chibaktoi ahuvosoi, and she will hold him in her arms. The yusupa loy kolze kishirafim mishikrusoi, and when he finally comes round, we tell him what we gave him. How your doyeg al zeh, you're going to be upset about that. V'yachshuv akol hefsed v'lo revach. Ay, you'll think, what a waste. All that, and I was shikir. Mipnei shalei bo liyodo ha'anoy sahim v'hu binyan shiyagish v'yinom bohem. Because he wasn't in a state where he could enjoy them. So you see, says the Kuzri, this is the goy talking, he's talking from experience. He says, so you see that the more sober a person is, and the more serious he is, the more physical pleasure he has. If it was an animal thing, if pleasure was an animal thing, then a shikur should have more of it than a sober person. Just as an animal should have more than a human being, and a baby should have more than an adult. But you see, it's not like that. As a human being becomes more aware of his conscience, and as he becomes more serious, and as he becomes more sober and more sophisticated, so his pleasure becomes greater. Omar Echover, I just want to start this paragraph. Ha'izdamnus lahanoa v'hargoshoso. The opportunity to appreciate the pleasures of pleasure, the sheyachshov beheedero kodim lochein kofel ha'anom, are doubled by the contemplation of the absence of those pleasures before you indulge in them. That's how to increase pleasure. If you can use your powers of imagination to project yourself into a situation where those pleasures are where you are deprived of those pleasures, then you will find double pleasure in the pleasure itself. And we're talking only about physical pleasure at the moment. This has nothing to do with anything spiritual. It's amazing that in Sefer the Kuzri we're being taught how to enjoy, how to find pleasure, how to find hanoah, how to find physical and material pleasure in the things that we do. So again, the Tolstoy that I read you last night, he came to that recognition when he was actually deprived of the pleasures. That brought him to the pleasure, to the understanding that there is no greater pleasure than the satisfaction of a need. But you can only appreciate that when the satisfaction of your need is deprived from you. When you're deprived from the satisfaction of your need, then you can appreciate that there's no greater pleasure in life than drinking when you're thirsty. But if it's a reflex action, thirsty, have a drink, and you don't even notice, then you miss the pleasure. Now, says the Kuzri, a human being, a sober human being, can stop for a moment before he drinks that water and can say to himself, how would I feel if there was no water? If for the next 10 miles there isn't any water at all, what would I be feeling at this moment? And what would I be feeling in half an hour's time? And what would I be feeling in an hour's time? And in what state of health would I be in 2 hours' time? And in what state of consciousness would I be in 5 hours' time? How would I be? And would I deserve such a thing? Would it be right? Would it be fair of the Ribbono Shel Olam if I didn't have water? He looks at himself and says, of course it would be fair. If I'm really going to be paid for everything that I do, why not? Why have I got such a right to water? And then he takes the glass of water in his hands and then he drinks the water. He will taste in that water things that he's never tasted before. V'zeh mito'eles habrochis. And that's the function of a bracha. That's the purpose of a Birkas HaNe'emah. To actually stop and appreciate that this is not something that has to be taken for granted, that appreciating who you are and what your rights really are, you shouldn't have that hanor, you shouldn't have that pleasure, it should be deprived. And use your imagination to project yourself into the state of Pierre in the Tolstoy. And then you drink the water, and then you eat the food, and then you do what has to be done. Then it's a different kind of pleasure altogether. This is unbelievable. I don't understand how anybody can learn this and not become frugal. Because whatever you're motivated, if a person's motivated by religious feeling, then the previous paragraph should make him frugal. And if he just partially likes to enjoy his life, plain and simple, that likes to enjoy things, then this has to make him frugal. It is so true, and that's all you have to do. There's no magic to it. You just have to try it out and see what it does for you. I can't understand how one can go through this and not become frum. And this is the kind of stuff that you've got to remember where it is. It's the kind of thing that you've got to learn. Somebody comes to the Beis HaMedrash and between Minch and Maariv, you don't know what to learn with him about tshuva, or somebody's not yet about tshuva. This is the kind of thing you take out. It's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Takes out a person, walks into the Beis HaMedrash, so you sit him down and you say, you want to enjoy yourself? Come. For 5 minutes I'm going to read. We'll learn together a debate that took place between a Jew and a non-Jew hundreds of years ago. Just this little part of it. That's all. How to enjoy Olam Hazeh. How to find pleasure. How to increase the level of pleasure. Sit down and learn such a thing. What a brocha is. What a Birkas HaNe'emah is. And you've given that person something that he can use for the rest of his life. And you've opened his eyes to the Chochmas HaTorah in a way that you couldn't do with hours and hours and hours of talking. Such a person is going to want to say to you, without a question, is going to say to you, where can one learn more of this? So you say every Sunday morning at 8:15. That's it and finish. And then you've got another person learning the Kuzri. And it doesn't take very long. You're learning the Kuzri, you want to learn a little bit more, you want to learn a little bit more. That's how it's done. That's how it needs to be done. And as I've said to you often, the number of people that have passed through this Beis HaMedrash and have been allowed through, we're going to have to one day give din and cheshbon for that. The number of people that have gone through, hundreds and hundreds, I think it's into the thousands already since we've started, of people who have been here, have been for a few shiurim, who've come in and just been allowed to go and miss all this because there's nowhere else in the town where this is even supplied. There's no access to it. The chances that somebody who's just passed through ever finds such a thing are very limited. And for that kind of thing, we'll have to give din b'cheshbon. I don't know whether it's a selfishness on our part or we just don't think in those terms or whatever it is. Last night at the Mitzvah Shabbos Shir, there were 100 people, of which a very small percentage were, or a relatively small percentage, were Beis HaMedrash. Those were all people from outside. But these are people that one needs to afford the opportunity. You take somebody 5 minutes before he gets out, you say, I want to just learn with you something I learned last week. And you sit down and you learn. It's absolutely mind-blowing.